Let me tell you a little bit about tonight's session and some ideas that I have. We took a look at a lot of the work that we did in our center, and actually a foundation gave us about $125,000 to do an evaluation of the programs that we had done over 10 years' time. And most programs that we do in our center are longer term, 6 months or more. So there's a lot of evidence that one-shot deals don't work very well. So unless there's a way to incorporate that work, so a training session one time and then you go home and you never, it doesn't get woven in, it's less likely to have an impact. So because of that, the way our center does its work is often in partnership with people and organizations over a longer period of time. So as, you know, when you're in a place in an organization and you care about it, you know, you sometimes don't have a very clear view of whether or not the work you're doing is very helpful or effective. So we started interviewing, and we didn't do it. We got funding so that other outside evaluators evaluated then and worked with organizations we had worked with. And what came out of that, the largest headline that emerged out of that evaluation was very insightful for us, and that was that most people come and work in our center not because they want to be leaders, but because they want to bring about some kind of change. So we had been looking at a lot of the leadership literature and resources to kind of build leadership capacities, but that took us into a new chapter, really looking at the nature of change and effective change, to see if there were some ways or resources that we could share with people that would help them as they try to make things happen differently. And so what I thought we could do tonight is to talk about maybe some initiatives that you're part of, where you're trying to either in yourself or in your organization, in your congregation, bring about a change. How you might frame that work for yourself or the group that you're part of. Rather than having an answer, just kind of how to think about it. We've only got an hour. But these are just some themes that may be helpful to you as you look at your own project. So how does that sound? And maybe I just open it up to kind of ask people, in your own work or in your own community service or your families or whatever, are there some things that you're working on that you think you'd like to see happen differently? Or even an issue in your congregation that seems to be creating some tension, where there are sort of suggestions of doing things differently? Do all of you have things going on like that?
I'm a mental health counselor primarily, but I've gotten asked to do organizational consultations, especially, and this is what is kind of disturbing to me. I used to work in employee assistance programs, so I recognized the beast when I thought I saw it, is that I get asked to do these consultations just before they're going to make some cuts or cut budgets or make what I would consider, what I'm assuming most employees would be considering, bad changes.
Okay.
You know, and so essentially I am doing a grief workshop, I think, and that's okay. The approach that I've taken is that it's, you know, there's going to be grieving, there's going to be dissatisfaction, there's going to be goodbyes, and the people usually, they already know what the change is about, and I'm hoping to give them the tools to know that there are some steps to this process. I like the steps you put up there, too. I'd like to be a little more positive than naming it in my heart, because I know it is just an anguish process, but I'm naming it as a grief.
Okay. So you're coming in, somebody else has sort of decided a change, and you've been brought in.
Yeah, how do you deal with it? And they say, do a workshop on how do you deal with organizational change, and it's a euphemism for there's going to be some really difficult things that are coming down the pipe.
Yeah. And there are a lot of sort of code words out there in some places, I don't know about your organization, some organizations I'm in, where senior management really has decided to cut back in order to increase profits. And so they can involve
this
a lot of people. So sometimes there are a lot of ethical questions involved too.
Yeah.
Maybe we can talk a little bit more about that, but I thought what we talk about tonight are the broader frameworks.
Yeah, what I'm looking for is a healthier approach for, you know, for, if I get asked to do something, maybe I shouldn't even do that kind of a thing if I know it's going to be it.
Well, I think this might be helpful to kind of see the broad questions. At least when you get asked by an organization to work with them, you might be able to interview them about some of these broader questions so that you know kind of what the framework is for the change itself.
I just sent a proposal to do, and then I said that staff will have to take this questionnaire and tell that everybody on the staff is going to state on the questionnaire, they have the opportunity to state what they think is really going on.
Okay.
I won't take any more time. Okay.
Other things, are there other people involved personally with some change initiative, or is there sort of a battle going on within a congregation or a group that you're part of about sort of we should be something different or things should be changed?
Mm-hmm. I am from a large congregation, and our pastor, only a year and a half, has left under duress. And I see the anguish, the anger, the trying for the analysis, the discontented groups.
Okay.
And it's a very painful
So
process.
A change of a pastor is a problem, is it?
But it's more than just a change of a pastor. It's
threat of legal action.
Yes.
It's happening more and more.
Yeah, okay. I mean, he threatened to sue, and so...
Okay, so you're trying to kind of make some sense out of this.
Make some sense, and I am on the long-range planning committee, and so basically we were trying to get through one day at a time, and so now we need to start to get ahead, but there's still a lot of discontented groups.
Okay, so changes are thrust upon you. I mean, you're right
yes.
in the middle of it. A question that's always a good question, if you're part of a group or an organization, or it doesn't have to be the total congregation, it could be part, it could be a women's group, it could be anything, is to raise the question, why should we change? The reason that's a good question is they'll get people talking about what's important to them. And not to say, well, it's a good reason or a bad reason, but to get all of those things out. If you're trying to find a solution that works for everybody, you've got to get all of that stuff out on the table. So when you ask people why change and take notes, try to keep track carefully, because some will say, well, it's not a good idea. Then you say, why is it important for you to stay the way we are? Then you get behind that. You get at if we're all going to come through it together, let's figure out what are the valuable things that we have to protect as we go through the change. So a suggestion I'd have is that if you're working with groups that are thinking about doing new things, I mean, even the change of a pastor, you know, there are reasons that there's a sadness about not changing, but there's also seeing a need to kind of get back into a peaceful way, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, but to sort all of those out rather than to say, well, these are the good ideas and these are the bad ones and now we're going to change. And there's this old notion that I say is that I don't mind change, I just mind being changed.
Okay.
And so people need to know that they get to be a part of the decision of changing, not sort of you're out to change them and to fix them.
I think in organizations, though, a lot, you know, there is somebody else that's made this decision. It could be a funding cut. It mm-hmm. could be profit issues. It could be some
legal
political
action.
Issues, legal action.
Okay.
And so a lot of times people come into, okay, we're going to have this discussion about change, and they feel the change is being forced on them, and they're resistant to that, right?
Then, as a member, if that's where you are, and you feel like it's being done on to you,
mm-hmm.
then you can ask the question, as a citizen, can we talk a little bit about why you think it's important for us to change?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to wait for the positional person to say, we're changing. And you, at the same time, you don't want to sound whiny. You know, like you're creating barriers. But if you think that, then others do as well. And the reason that we got into some of this, I started working with one of my colleagues, and I'm going to share some of his work with you. We started looking at community-based organizations and government organizations, not church congregations, but as we got into it, there seemed to be a lot of parallels. There are a lot of changes that are brought about in organizations that are sort of what I call the program of the year. This year we do this, next year we do this, and it's always ever changing. we started looking at the tremendous cost to sort of do these changes. And then over time, they weren't sustained. So, I mean, here at Holden, we talk a lot about sustainability. Now, there are a lot of things that need to come and go, but any changes within an organization is very expensive. Change of a pastor. Look at all the people hours that you put into changing a pastor. Look at all the emotional hours that you put into getting people refocused on something else and away from sort of some of the ongoing work of the congregation, right? I mean, you can see the tremendous cost, to the front end cost to change. So if we want to bring about change, it's really important to try to make it have staying power. And the way to have staying power is you've got to involve a lot of people, as opposed to just special interest groups. Because what will happen is a special interest group will bring it in, but then the other special interest groups will sort of gather their ideas. And you sort of have this white cap effect. So it's one of the, that's why sustainability becomes an important issue, I think, on change, is that it's very expensive. When, and that's what we started looking at, is we started looking at community-based programs that had received awards, like they were effective, they were doing what they said they would do, they were sort of outstanding programs, and they had received national awards. And a very high percentage of them after 5 years were gone. And so we started to look at what keeps a program, an award-winning program, and how to set it up if you want it to have some staying power. So these are some themes out of that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, the parallel you just identified, something that's sustainable and survived, especially, you know, perhaps longer than 5 years. We're going involved in a change effort at our congregation. We recognized that we did not have a very effective youth ministry, and that's not atypical to Lutheran congregations. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got them captive till they're confirmed, and all of a sudden they can't find them. And prior to that time, it's only because they're held hostage that they're there, probably. Mm-hmm. And we said, you know, there's got to be a better way. Mm-hmm. And through I'm on our personnel committee there, and I think we have some pretty effective leadership in that group, but we've combined with our parish head committee and with our Congregational Life Committee and one other committee, and through that representation, you know, the embracing, what you're saying is, let's all get together and identify, let's not sort out the bad, and let's find out what it is we really want to do here. Mm-hmm. We went out and did some benchmarking with other congregations. You know, the system can't heal itself from within. We recognize.
Does everybody know what benchmarking is? Benchmarking is a way to sort of measure yourself against what some of the often good practices are, practices that are working. So looking at sort of models elsewhere that seem to be more effective, and then sort of comparing yourself to that to get a sense.
And we knew that we weren't going to find the answers within our own congregation, because we hadn't just turned this rock over to say we're having this problem right now. I mean, we've been having this problem. Mm-hmm. And so we went offsite and looked at some other congregations and what they were doing, and didn't confine ourselves to Lutheran churches, and have now at least taking the first step of embracing the Logos program. Mm-hmm. And bringing that meal and worship and fun and music together on a Wednesday night. Now, we haven't done this yet, but we're in that process, and we've built up the momentum through representation and dialogue. I think that we'll send hopefully 10 members off-site to be trained in one of the Logos training sessions, and then we'll come back and we'll open up to the congregation and say, we now think we know enough about this to approach you, the congregation, the membership, and say, we think this is the right thing to do. And oh, by the way, we spawned off into a second subcommittee, and actually we call this the dream team that started this process. We said the dream team has served its purpose, and this gets back to too many things run their course and they stick around too long. Mm-hmm. That team's done its job. We've embraced the program, at least initiated across, and now we need a staff person to be responsible for that. So an associate pastor will assume that program startup short term, but we want to go out now and find out a youth director. But this is going to be a significant change to the congregation, mm-hmm. because we've not had that inertia and that focus yet. So it's been kind of fun to be a part of that and get the wheels spinning now. Mm-hmm.
And what you're getting at is, I think oftentimes it's good to kind of see change things if you're going to try to explain it to somebody. If you've got this idea percolating and you know that you've got to really engage a lot of people, it's important to really be articulate about why this is important to the life of the organization before you get into all the details of the program. Have you ever gone into something and they just sort of overwhelm you with a lot of data and say, this is going to, and by the way, we need a lot of money. And then they never get around to tell you why it's absolutely essential to the heart and the life of the organization. Start out there and spend 80% of your time talking about that. And then people will help you on the other things, I think. But that's what you're trying to do, is to inform the question.
And what we've been able to do and what's been, I think, will help us be successful is if we had a group develop a five-year strategic plan, and this is one of the four key components of that, that we need to have a healthy and vibrant youth program within the congregation. And that's not rocket science. I mean, any congregation says, well, yeah, we've got to have that. But to say, and here's our strategic plan, and here's how we expect that to be enacted, and now we're going down the road with that as our reference and our vision. So, and it's been successful.
Well, let me share. Let me tell you where this came from. This notion of why change, you know, and ultimately you have to answer that so that it relates to the life of the organization. Otherwise, it'll just be some sort of menial little thing that is the program of the year. This is a definition of leadership from Elizabeth Cady Stanton. And Elizabeth Cady Stanton worked with Susan B. Anthony. And so as they looked back on their work about bringing about a change, Elizabeth Cady Stanton really thought about the movement, and it was about moving from anguish to anger to analysis to action, all of the above. And a lot of times when we talk about change, we wanted to do the analysis and put out the action plan. And I think that it's important in change initiatives to give people time to sort of anguish about something. You see, otherwise, why change? And anger is an important energy that jump-starts us. And so usually a critical issue in any organization has some controversy around it. It's not a critical issue if it's not. But it's around things that you can't move forward without addressing it. That you truly believe that it's something that you've got to address in order to move forward. So to frame it in that way, you know, to have something. But you can see that I think so often we sort of don't pay attention to the anguish and the anger about initiatives. And I think there's quite a bit of evidence that we need to do a better job of that.
Sharon, could you give us an example of how that would work in an organization?
Laying off a lot of people.
Kind of go through that whole process? And sort of
there is a lot. Well, first of all, people start worrying about it. They hear about it and the rumors get out. Or some things with the pastor. You know, the rumor gets out and people are anxious about that. And then they start hearing about, well, a pastor is going to stay or go. And then some people are happy and some people are mad. I mean, there's a whole range of emotions. The problem with some organizations and some of us as individuals is that we get stuck in one of these things. Mm-hmm. Okay? So some of us are always planning because it's easier to plan than it is to deal with maybe our aim. Do you see? I mean, we don't keep moving. Some organizations, most strategic planning initiatives in the United States don't work, 80%. And that's because they get stuck here. They do the plan and they shelve it. And so when you say, well, what's your plan? They have to go look it up. But see, it doesn't keep moving. And so there, at least she thought that leadership was about, it was dynamic and it was about all of these things. Does that make sense to your experience?
And instead of just the concept of anguish to anger, is there like a company that you work with that went through these stages successfully?
Yeah, I can see them. They're much more holistic, happening at the same time and differently among different people. But some people say you shouldn't be angry. You know, I mean, that's not an organized way to do things. Like getting upset with people who say, well, you shouldn't be upset about this. Well, they are. And so it's part of the change process. So I don't have it. It's not as prescriptive as trying to describe sort of the range. of chaos when you try to bring about change. There's just a lot of things flying around.
Mm-hmm. So can you have change if the people don't think they need change? If there isn't any anguish? If they're content with things the way they are?
Most change initiatives don't work until people, most organizations that change are under threat. I mean, there's just a lot of evidence that unless there's sort of a collective energy about doing something differently, it doesn't happen. So the sad thing is that if you vote, then you have winners and losers.
Mm-hmm. In some cases, it's really an awareness that you have to help people to see that there are some needs for some change. Mm-hmm. And that there, I mean, my issues is what's happening to the young adults among the Lutheran congregation. They got it going on.
Yeah.
I mean, her daughter's going to an Episcopalian church, my daughter's going to a Presbyterian church. They're still Christians. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm delighted about that. But what, I mean, the Lutheran church has just kind of let that be a big
so
boy.
It's time to take a fresh look.
Yeah.
You know? So and part of that is sort of anguish, right?
Well, to help people be anguished about it.
Sure.
You know, you've got white hair, don't you miss people here who are just out of college or just out of high school? And it's really a raising of an awareness, I think, that this is a generation that's going, and when they've gone too far, they must come again.
The organization that I work for, this is tied very closely to both the comment and question you raised. We've not had good marketing data to say this is our position in the world market, which has slipped significantly. We now have a new CEO who's come on board who is very insightful and knows how this change process needs to work, and they've gone out and gathered the right information to set the table to put it in front of all of our employees worldwide to say, do you see what's happened to this organization? Do you understand that we're at risk? Do you understand the external threat? Otherwise, people are fat, dumb, and happy.
Exactly.
You know, I got gray hair, and where are the kids? Well, nobody told me it was a problem. Well, let's gather some information, put the trends up there to say, folks, do you understand what recruitment means to a population? And if you don't recruit, your population is doomed for extinction. Do we as Lutherans understand that if we don't recognize the trend of where our youth are going and they're not here, we're doomed to extinction? And it may not be quite that bad or that abrupt, but that's how we look at it at our congregation and said, I look at the choir up there on Sunday morning, and my mother, who sits there with gray hair, is pretty normative, but who's in that group? We're the young people. We're the young people.
Oftentimes, too, when you think about change, it doesn't have to be total and absolute. You know, so it's like a threat. You know, there are a lot of ways that we can bring about change and bring the past with us, rather than, I mean, a lot of us have been conditioned to sort of either it's this or it's this. So that I think we need to get better when we talk about change, the way that we can embrace what we had before by asking people what's important. What's important about this? But also then people start talking about what's important that we don't lose. Okay, so we don't have to have this sort of, well, we used to be this, you know, now I'm a this. Because that's usually not the way it happens. But there are there's a lot of evidence that there has to be some discontent of some kind in order to energize. Now, and I think in this model, these two are sort of the engines of change. I mean, of helping people look at that. So currently successful organizations aren't looking for great new things. I mean, why argue with success? So if they perceive themselves to be successful, now usually what happens is parts of them perceive themselves to be successful and other parts don't. You ever been in that situation where somebody says, things are great, and you say, where have you been sitting? Right? So that's another thing you need to talk about that. So that's another way to an important thing about asking, really raising the question, why should we change? So having said that, let's just assume now that there are some agreement that things should be changed. I'd kind of like to share with you then what the context, an organizational context or a community context.
Somebody's in the midst of copying that.
I can give it to you.
Good.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
We'll accept that change.
We didn't get angry enough.
And with some angry
language there.
This came out of the language.
A little language, though.
This came out of the research of a guy by the name of Paul White, and he hasn't published on this yet. I was working with him on this project, and we finished all the research. I'm not a researcher, I just kind of hang out, and then I steal the frameworks that emerge out of the research, and they write it up in peer-reviewed journals, and I try to share it with people who are trying to do work on the streets. But Paul finished this research, and the Pew Charitable Trust, which is a large foundation, happens to be located in Philadelphia, it's one of the largest foundations in the United States, liked it so much that they offered him about $28 million to invest in community projects using this framework. So now when you apply for money from the trust, Paul looks at it for some of these frameworks based on, is this going to, because a lot of projects that apply to foundations for funding are based on trying to change, get something to work differently. So they thought it would be a good idea to sort of have some new criteria for selection. And so, because they'd like to invest their money in change projects that have some staying power, some sustainability. So one of the things that Paul, we found when we started looking at these organizations is that organizations had some shared, what I call shared values in their culture. Okay, so, and they are things like honesty. This is also in the change literature, by the way. In change literature, there's a lot of evidence that people are honest. That means not they have the truth, but they feel like it's an environment where they can speak up and say what they're thinking without being afraid. Okay, so it's not about the truth, but about an openness to hear perspectives.
These are markers of successful change?
These are the organizations that have been able to sustain change initiatives. They have these kind of shared values in their culture. So they believe that people should be honest. That means you don't go into a meeting or have a committee meeting and then everybody goes into their office to kind of talk about, or little subgroups to talk about what was going on there, where they can hardly wait to get away. That's not that they don't make those mistakes, but they really work at trying to have a much more honest environment. So it's not that they've arrived, but they've committed to this and they talk a lot about it, that they work hard at it. It's part, and you never arrive. But the organizations agree to do that. Another thing is that they value courage. And the way that we started defining courage was they talk openly about what they're afraid of. And they work on their fears. So that, what's the worst thing that can happen? What are they afraid of? Going broke, things won't happen, things that won't work out. But another thing is that they work on trust. Another one, these are Paul's words, rigor, which is I call hard work. My mother taught me that one. But, you know, it's the notion that it's not easy for anyone. You have to work hard for things that you care deeply about. And so they believe in that, not being workaholics, but that it's just hard work. And then the fifth one, which I sent Paul over to the Lutheran Center in St. Paul about, is they described it as faith. Some people are more comfortable here with talking about hope. But that it's a culture where people really have faith that things can be different. Even when the evidence is that we're about to explode. And that we have our doubts about that. And so there are a couple others that come up in the literature on change that didn't come out of Paul's work, but I think are important. One is respect. And the other one is commitment. And that's commitment to build whatever you're talking about, whatever the initiative is, some kind of commitment. But these seem to be, there seems to be a lot of glue. Some of these also come up in the change literature. But I think it's a good thing to think about. If, I think we have to create and be rigorous about creating the context for a particular change. So, for example, in your organization where you're looking at the change of a pastor, you see, if the change gets superimposed on a culture that doesn't have these kind of values, it's going to be kind of a rocky road, I think, sometimes. But a lot of us have something to do with trying to work on, in our organizations, these values in the culture. To talk about those, to say, how are we doing to get everybody involved with? Are we being honest with each other? You know, because these are things that don't often show up in a plan of work, in the long-range plan. And yet what we're finding is that if you don't have these things in place, a lot of those other sort of plans never come about. And so I think it's being rigorous about the culture of our organization. So that's just kind of, that's one thing that you might want to think about if you're involved with the change.
I would assume that you've got to kind of realize that you're not going to get 100% response. I mean, I'm just thinking in terms of the congregation. There are people who are not going to be willing to work hard, and they're going to even go someplace else.
Right.
And that's... there's a certain sense in which that has to be accepted as one of the things that will happen whenever we have a change.
There's also the catch-22 when a legal situation is imposed, that both sides have been advised by their lawyers not to talk about it at all.
That became an issue for us, and this pastor was finally asked to leave, but a lot of the people that did not want to leave do not know
That's exactly what happened in our church last year.
But then what you can do is be as honest as you can by saying we have certain legal responsibilities here, we can't talk about it, but at least you give as much information as you can. I think part of it is fear-driven, that if you really look at some of these things, then you have to come to the realization that some people aren't on board anyway. And so you begin to see the reality of your organization, your current situation. And then you can move forward.
And then you see the people who do share these things.
Right, right. Or you can say, how can we work on some of these things? Or what would it take? You know, or the realization that certain things are going to be a lot of hard work. And let's not fool ourselves to put them on our list of to-dos if somebody isn't willing to put the energy into it.
And we don't all have to agree to still be part of the same shared values.
Right.
We can have different opinions.
Right. But I think those are just something to put out for people to say, if we're going to plan some major change, is there a foundation here of these things? Because if we don't have this, it's going to be more difficult for us. And these are just common values that were in all the organizations that we looked at that sustained initiatives over time. And they use these words even to describe themselves. So I just think it's a nice tool to get, and I ask organizations and groups I'm working with to think about this and to talk about them. And they start where they are. It's not sort of as in judgment, but they start getting action plans of things that they can do among themselves to work on some of these things.
It actually looks like what you need also in just a one-on-one relationship. I mean, when you really look at honesty, courage, trust, faith, respect, I mean, it really... Mm-hmm.
Rigor.
But you never arrive on any of these things. But I think it's also a way for self-reflection. You know, and it gets your group then being more proactive rather than reactive.
Yeah.
And a lot of us are conditioned to be reactive. So a way to make this proactive is say, how can we do things differently around some of these things, so that we come up with some new idea. What would it take for us to be more honest with each other? I mean, oftentimes there are good reasons why people are afraid not to talk in the big room. And so it gets us into conversations. What's behind that? And that's part of this. I mean, they're all interrelated. But, you know, sometimes it's pretty scary to bring up your own opinion when you don't think anybody else in the room thinks that way.
It does take courage.
It's like, I think I'll just take my cookies and go home.
well, sometimes in a corporate setting, there's a fear that underlies that, you know, courage, you have courage versus fear, and honesty.
You sometimes are afraid of a hidden agenda there.
Oh, well, yeah, it's like if you're not in the tier that's making the decisions, right, and you voice an opinion, and that position is not at least adhered to by one other member that's on that tier, you can be seen as a rabble-rouser. Mm-hmm. And because they're trying to maintain status quo, they don't want the change. They don't want to admit that there's a problem. And if you voice that, if you're a whistleblower, you might as well start, you know, typing out your resume.
I think that gets back to being very indicative of why so many organizations can't sustain change, because if I live in that environment where I fear being labeled a rabble-rouser, those values don't exist. Right. Open honesty, trust, mm-hmm. Those things don't exist, and long-term, whatever change is initiated won't be sustained.
Well, that's why, in another light, sort of oftentimes my role in organizations is to work as a facilitator and a coach to bring about change initiatives. And just a political strategy, and particularly in the for-profit sector, but also in big nonprofit organizations. I will start with senior management and the board, because I'm not going to set anybody up. And I'm not going to go in and ask a lot of people to work hard on something when the board of directors and senior management are going to vote it down. So if I'm going to work from the bottom up, I want to make sure that I have the support of senior management about making a change. And sometimes senior management see change as a threat to their jobs. And so that's an issue, but that is an important issue.
But wouldn't it have been senior management that asked you to come?
Sometimes, sometimes not. Sometimes I get brought in by middle management, but I feel like I can't serve them until I have a conversation, right, because so much of what they're doing is dependent on a budget or something else. And so I can do that. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna, it's a way that I've learned the hard way by making mistakes, where I've gone in and worked with a group and they've worked really hard. And then the system that they're a part of wasn't really serious about wanting their opinion. And that's another issue. It's about reframing the issue rather than dealing with the symptom. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that, you're absolutely right.
Well, I heard a point made earlier about perception. And I think I have worked with a man once, a couple of years, whose key phrase was perception is everything. And that if management perceives a threat, whether or not there really is one, mm-hmm. then they're going to hunker down until that threat is alleviated or let go or seeing things mm-hmm. are done differently. Mm-hmm. And that, how do you get around those perceptions? Especially when the management says, well, everything's fine, why should we change? And yet, like you're saying, you can't be innovative mm-hmm. unless you're starting to go through this process.
Well, usually senior management has a sense that some things aren't working very well, or they're working on a strategy. I just worked with a large healthcare organization looking at change initiatives. And they're doing very well. It's a wonderful organization. It's a for-profit organization. But they really, things were percolating, and they knew, given a lot of sort of analysis of what's happening in healthcare, that they saw some things on the horizon. And they wanted to be proactive rather than reactive. And that they weren't doing, and so this change initiative was about restructuring their organization in a way that they pushed a lot of the decision-making down to a different level in the organization. But so it wasn't about a crisis, but your comment is absolutely right. That, I mean, sometimes you have to be careful about those things. Sometimes, too, you just have to do what you think is right, and people vote with their feet. So, you know, I mean, that's just the way it is. And sometimes you think you're not going to change the organization. You'll try to find one that's more closely aligned with who you are and what you have to contribute.
That can also alleviate some of the anger if that's what they decide to do, rather than stay and cause more in the mm-hmm.
or fester. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm not giving up. Mm-hmm. So one question would be, do we share these values? The early question would be, why change? Okay, then another one is, what are we building? Which is the vision question, but it's in a smaller way. What does it look like when it's working? But most people are much better at sort of envisioning something in their mind than they are talking about a change. So describe the organization or describe the situation after the change has been brought about and it's working right. What's going on? Sort of create a video in people's minds. So describe for people what we're going to work on building here. But it's really in the active life of the organization rather than sort of a program. So the advance work needs to be done in terms of what will the congregation look like?
What will the youth program look like?
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm just walking that road right now.
And
I see
so it's
here
not
a question out of the copy when we get home.
What will be happening with our young
right.
people?
Or what when we sort of realign ourselves and get ourselves back in a more peaceful situation with the pastor, what will it be like? And it's not just about a pastor, but it's about the context. And so it's more than just bringing in a person. It's about relationships in the congregation, because this is a gift in a way too, because you're going to realize that there are all sorts of things going on in terms of relationships. And so you'll have some new insights, you know, to kind of, but you have to, it's about production, I think, and I believe, I understand John McKnight was in here earlier this summer, but it's what you want to produce versus fix. So I'm not very enthusiastic about a lot of the tools of analysis that are on problem solving and what the problem is, because people get weary about that. And people's energies are a lot better if we know we're trying to build something rather than just repairs. So we're trying to build a village here, not sort of fix up old buildings, right? And it's much more holistic. So that would be the second question, is really to engage people in a change, any kind of change, is what are we working to build here? Then, when we get that, then it needs to be involved. Okay? So, and another thing that comes under this question then, is it true to our abilities? Do we have the capacity and the ability to do this? Can we do it? Or how can we do it? Now, for a lot of groups that I'm working with, this is where you get into saying, we need to build some new part. Here's what we can do, but we can't do it by ourselves, so we're gonna have to forge some new partnerships. Okay, I'm in a lot of places where partnership work is big stuff. Everybody wants to have partners, sort of in the abstract. I think partnerships are great as long as they're connected to what you want to build. See, networking, why network if you don't know what you're trying to build? I mean, network with what? So it needs to be connected to what you're trying to produce or build. So then talking about who needs to be involved, you know, youth in the congregation, the board of the congregation, the pastor, the whole congregation, but it'll get you whose capacities and involvement really is needed to kind of bring this about. Any comments on that or questions about that?
I have a comment on partnering. Just an example, I've been working for several years in public health, and we see changes in how the department's put together because the elected officials are changing how that's mm-hmm. put together. And so there's issues about how to sustain programs that we think are important to continue to have and be if the dollars aren't there. And looking at partnering with the hospital district or, you know, some other health care unit in the community that we've only seen as peripheral,
mm-hmm.
or they've seen us as not important, but all of a sudden we have something they need, which is statistical and data, the information they need for their benchmarking and all that sort of thing. And it's a whole new idea about partnering in those ways. And so we're all doing stuff like this in our own organizations, and we haven't even all met together yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're all kind of in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a rural community. How do we still provide what we feel is important to the community, and the community is telling us they want? And because we have to downsize. I mean, things have to look different because there's not enough resources to do it all the way it's been done before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's out of necessity, but people are trying to be enthused about partnering and have it in a positive light.
Problems with a lot of partnering is that it's always, it comes after everything else. So you do your regular work, and then if you have time, you work on your partnership work. So we're actually even working in some places where we're creating, like with partnerships between school boards and community-based organizations, some new decision-making structures so that people's jobs get reframed, that the work building partnerships is as important as sort of assignments within their own organization. Because usually organizations are designed to have job descriptions that relate only to jobs within the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so where do you put all the jobs that relate to partnerships? And that's one of the problems, is that there's a lot of sort of organizational things that don't work in harmony with effective partnership building.
Well, so I said everybody's doing this here and here and here,
yeah,
saying we're going to do something together, but that part of it's not happening.
It doesn't get rewarded. You know, you don't get pay raises, you don't get evaluated on those things. I mean, all sorts of things in very traditional organizations. And so I think that, you know, when I'm suggesting that when we do changes, we take a look specifically at evaluating the change, the transformation process, and saying, how are we doing on these things? And use this as a way of sort of monitoring ourselves as we go through a time. I think that's another thing. So you got brought in terms of being involved in a change, sort of midstream. Somebody put you on their list.
So to speak.
My sense.
You didn't say which list, though.
With your situation, I think oftentimes when somebody's brought in to sort of do counseling,
mm-hmm,
the people that you're counseling have very serious questions about this.
Where are we going?
Oftentimes, the agenda isn't open and honest. It goes back then to a shared value of honesty. So you're brought in here to do counseling, but what it's really about is to help people sort out, first of all, do we agree on what we're trying to build here?
Mm-hmm.
Which is often no agreement. And then not only that, but there's hidden agendas flying all over the place about the real reasons, honesty questions, about what they're really trying to build. So there's a lot of research now coming out, and there's something called re-engineering, which is just the fancy word for sort of changing an organization. But it happens in the private sector. But there's a lot of evidence that there's, when corporations in the United States lay off a lot of people, their stock goes up. And so that's called re-engineering. And senior executives make a lot of money when their stock goes up. And so there's a lot of strategies within the corporate world to increase stock. I mean, it's much more complex than that. But oftentimes it's not talked about openly in the organization.
I mean, it's part of the hidden agenda.
Right, you know? Right. And that's part of the honesty question, I believe, and I've experienced, where people can handle it if they have the facts. And let's lay it out. That's the reality of the corporate world these days. But it's hard when you come into counsel and people have partial information. I mean, they just go crazy. We all do. Because we feel like we're being played with. And so it makes your situation even more difficult.
Yeah, I give them kind of a scenario sometimes about, you know, having worked in the corporate, private, and public sectors for 25 years, I say some of you may decide that this organization doesn't match your deep held values, and you may decide to leave that, you know, during this whole process, because it is painful.
And that's, you know, it's also a matter of privilege. And it's a complex thing, because some people can't afford to leave. When they have children they have to feed. They have other responsibilities. And so those are very, I mean, you're...
It's fearful, you know, prospect.
Your job is a hard one, because you have to help people sort those things out and then find sort of peace within themselves. I mean, if they have to stay in, it's a horrible situation, to find a way to keep themselves centered in that craziness. But I'm suggesting sort of an ideal approach here. And so when I have a chance to work with an organization, I suggest that we talk about honesty. We talk about what are we really trying to build, and I want both the stated and the real. See, there are a lot of politically correct things that we talk about when we talk about what we're trying to build. It's what I call the stated mission and the real mission. And there are individuals that have missions that are different than the organizational's missions, and that's okay, it's the reality of it, getting all of those out. That's all part of, I think, really working hard and trying to bring about a change initiative. Then the third thing then, if we can start thinking about who needs to be involved, and that would include both inside and outside the organization and partnerships and networks and that sort of thing, then what we start talking about is how will this be workable? Which is the plan? Or the organization. Okay, and that's all of the charts and graphs and stuff that sort of lay out, here's the plan to bring this about. It's the design of how are we going to organize this work. Some things that we know here are, that's really important in change initiatives, is to be flexible. And so sometimes if you lay out the plan, then some people say, well, you said. And so I would suggest when you lay out the plan to say, this is very changeable and we have to keep it flexible. So we don't know what we're doing, it's a new initiative, we don't know how it's going to work. So everybody needs to understand that all of these things, at least this is the plan for the moment, and that will keep people up to date, but there needs to be a lot of flexibility in sort of organizing this work.
Another thing that you said was very important, the communication, let people know. That's something that's very crucial.
That needs to be ongoing throughout the whole change process, be it an organization or an entire nation. Yeah. Still coming back to our youth, you know, this fits so perfectly, but that ongoing communication has to be part of it all the way through.
Yeah.
And communication is sort of a code word because it's really about power.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime that somebody says we've got communication problems, it's about who has control of what information, oftentimes.
Yeah.
It's not your ability to sort of communicate. It's about control of information. And people get, that's why people get upset when they don't know, is because they feel left out and they feel powerless. And they feel like they've been treated like children. Like, you know, you think I could handle that information or whatever. And so it becomes a code word for being involved. And particularly in organizations where we feel like we're in it together, then if only certain people have the information, then we're not really all equal. So I think...
Aaron, just as you were talking there, I'm thinking about a dynamic that we have going in our initiative, in our congregations. We're being very selective right now who we talk to about being in a leadership role. And so at that point, yes, it is a power situation because we're not openly communicating. We don't throw it out for every volunteer, please show up at the doorstep, because then you got to live with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you want people in a leadership role, you want people with some capabilities and competencies to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And you might as well look in the mirror and say, yes, this is about power right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be open and admit that. Down the road, we talk about it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And organizations have the same issue. You know, they selectively identify some things to talk about openly.
Mm-hmm. It's very complex, but my sense is oftentimes communication is just a code word for control.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way people perceive it, so they don't really want to go to a communication workshop on how to communicate. They want to talk about who has access to information and who controls that. It's very different. The other things, in terms of how to make things workable, suggestions that came out when we started looking at the structure of organizations that were good at bringing about change, they were flexible, they stayed flat, which meant that you didn't have to go through and you didn't have a lot of supervisors to report to, that people felt like they could do their work without sort of a lot of checking. So they intentionally tried to stay flat. They pushed authority downward. These two obviously are related to each other. But a lot of decision-making in a lot of different places rather than sort of one sort of keeper of all the decisions. That often happens with boards. Sometimes boards need to think that they need to make all the decisions. Well, they need to think among themselves and to start looking at effectiveness and to think about what changes are absolutely essential for the board, decisions are essential for the board to make, but what changes would be better made by other people in the organization. This is the work on how will this be workable. I'm starting to address these questions here. Because if you aren't intentional about them, oftentimes it doesn't happen. You just fall back on the old system of decision making. And then work to lower internal boundaries. So that how do youth programs relate to other programs in the church, for example? How can you lower some of those boundaries? The more you can do that, it just seems like change initiatives are more successful.
Put more people have ownership on it.
Right. And then the final thing is, what are the key resources? And how will you link? So this is the final step that you need to do in making a change, is what are the key resources that you need to bring this about, and how are you going to link to those? So that's money. But oftentimes when we think about change, that's the first thing we talk about. And then people get panicky that we can't get enough money, and that's the end of that. Or we don't have the time or something else. And it's because if people aren't convinced that it's important and meaningful to them, it's pretty hard to get excited about raising a lot of money. It's something that I think here in Holden, we talked about the capital campaign that's coming up. We're going to have to engage a lot of people on why it's important to keep Holden before we start asking them for a lot of money.
Why do you make that a standalone as opposed to not a bullet point under number 4? Isn't that part of the plan?
It could be. But it seems to be, it's a critical link. And actually, a lot of change initiatives are framed by 4 and 5. Here's a plan and here's what we need. And these things are never dealt with. What we're finding is that if you spend more time on 1 through 3, these are a breeze. So does that give you kind of a way to kind of think about how you might sort of put together a project to change something? Another thing, a key resource that I'm finding really helpful, I just did it with senior management in an organization, was I had each of them write stories about a change that they were personally working with and the lessons that they learned, 1.5 pages apiece. And I took all their stories and I took out on the common themes and I gave it back to them. Because their experience is very valuable when you come, so it's their own collective experience and what that tells us. And for this group, one of the things that was in every single story, there were, I think, 37 people, was that they had misjudged the time. It took a lot longer than they had anticipated. So that gave them some fresh ideas on how to make it work.